It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
we have a lot of people that come into Central Virginia Legal Aid and tell us, my house was foreclosed on last week, or I just got an eviction notice and my house was foreclosed on last month. It's much harder to help once the foreclosure has already taken place.
Volunteer private attorney Jim Thornton talks about the common legal strategies to stop foreclosures, often days or even hours before the foreclosure sale. And when the debt collector calls, we'll give you a word-for-word script to follow during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 72, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Governor Tim Kaine's final budget proposal, released Friday, December 17, 2009, reflects the problems facing Virginia in the current economy. As the needs of Virginians have grown during the recession, the state has fewer resources to address those needs. Revenues are down more than $4 billion in the 2010-2012 biennium, and the total budget shortfall is about $4.5 billion. In a new report, Bridging the Gap, the Commonwealth Institute examines key revenue components of the outgoing governor's proposal, including use of the rainy day fund, elimination of the dealer discount program, decoupling from the federal domestic production deduction provision, eliminating the car tax reimbursement to localities, and an income tax rate increase. The report also analyzes the impact of key spending cuts proposed by Kaine, including cuts to education, health care, and temporary assistance to needy families. The full report is available at www.thecommonwealthinstitute.org and clicking the link to Bridging the Gap. In other news, on December 15, 2009, the Court of Appeals of Virginia handed down a decision analyzing whether a marital property settlement agreement might be set aside as unconscionable. The wife had a third-grade education and many health problems, including diabetes, frequent mood swings, and rheumatoid arthritis, had married the husband when she was 16 and remained married to him for 38 years, and received food stamps at the time of the divorce. Under the agreement she signed without reading it, the husband paid no spousal support and received the house, his deferred compensation account, his retirement benefits, and all other marital assets except a car and a small amount of personal property. The Hanover County Circuit Court expressly found, quote, "This is about as grossly disparate a deal as probably anybody has ever seen," unquote, but enforced it. The Court of Appeals reversed, holding that, quote, "Gross disparity in conjunction with financial necessity on the part of the disadvantaged spouse establishes unconscionability without the need for separate proof of overtly oppressive influences exerted by the husband," unquote. The case is Sims v. Sims, record number 3101-08-2. with this week's News You Can Use. This is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is COBRA coverage. COBRA is the federal law that allows people who leave jobs and businesses with 20 or more workers to continue receiving health insurance through their former employer's health plan, generally for up to 18 months. The right to continue coverage applies to both workers and their dependents. Normally, people must pay the full cost of premiums plus a small administrative fee of up to 2% of premiums. However, until the end of 2009, the stimulus bill provides a 65% subsidy for up to 9 months to certain laid-off workers to help them pay for COBRA health insurance benefits. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and COBRA coverage is this week's legal term of the week.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. It's time for this week's question and answer. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Steve from Midlothian, Virginia.
Welcome to the show, Steve. What are we talking about this week?
Debt collection.
Okay, what question do we have?
I have an understanding of it's a question about debt collection and the limits to what they can go to. I have a cursory understanding of what they can and cannot do. If I'm correct, they can contact you between 8:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m., but I'm not 100% sure. My question is, they contact you before said times or after said times, what can I do? If they pepper you constantly with calls, again, what can I do? As far as where do my rights start and where do theirs stop?
Well, those are all excellent questions, and all that I'm going to answer applies to debt collectors who are collecting the debts of others. In other words, if it's the ABC Debt Collection Company and they're collecting for Visa, MasterCard, whatever, then they are covered by something called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. If, on the other hand, the creditor is collecting their own debt, for example, Sears is collecting an account you owe to Sears, then what I'm about to say doesn't apply. But under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, you're absolutely correct that the debt collector is not supposed to call before 8:30 in the morning or after 8:30 at night, and they're not supposed to use the phone to harass you, to be misleading, to be unfair, to be annoying, and they're certainly not allowed to call you time after time after time. What to do about it? The best advice I can give you is to maintain a phone collector log. And what I'm doing is reading to you from a log that was given to me by Crumbine Consumer Legal Services, and you can take it with you. And here are the directions. When the phone rings, answer it. When they ask for you, say the following, but you must remain calm when talking to them. Write down all the information they give you on your log. Remember to write down the date and time of the call. This is what you say to the collector. May I please have your first and last name? Would you please spell your name for me? Wait for the answer and write it down on the log. May I please have the name of your company? Wait for the answer and write it down on your log. May I please have the address of your company? Wait for the answer and write it down. May I please have your telephone number? Wait for the answer and write it down. Thank you. Then hang up the phone immediately. Do not wait for them to respond. Do not discuss anything with them. Do not argue. Let them figure out what they should do next. If they call back, after you've hung up the phone, repeat from the top and make sure you write down everything on your log. If they hang up on you, make sure that you have written on your log that they hung up on you. And if they refuse to answer any of the questions you are asking, do not answer any questions they ask until they have answered your questions first. and you write all of this down on the log. And there's a place on the log for all this information: date of call, time of call, how many minutes did it last, was it a phone call, a voicemail, or perhaps a letter, a paper, a message, the collector's name, the agency, and the phone number, and what did the collector say. This is enormously useful information if you're going to retain an attorney, whether it's a private consumer law attorney or legal aid, to file a lawsuit under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Because what you're describing is not how debt collectors are supposed to proceed, and they do it all the time anyway. Would you like a copy of this log to start using?
Yes, I would. Thank you.
Okay, very well. I'll be giving it to you. Thank you for your question. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, and we're talking with Jim Thornton. He is a commercial real estate attorney in Glen Allen, Virginia, and he volunteers twice a week at Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Thank you, Marty.
We're going to be talking today about a very interesting topic, which is stopping foreclosures. And could you start out by leading us through the foreclosure process in Virginia, Jim? How does it happen?
Most people that have a loan, that have taken out a loan on their house, have signed what's called a deed of trust, also called a mortgage. And what that actually does is put the title to your house in control of a trustee, and that trustee acts for the benefit of your lender. And when a borrower defaults on the loan, the lender tells the trustee to go and sell the house for the benefit of the lender, and then theoretically the lender takes the sale proceeds and pays the loan off.
So all of this, I gather, is done outside of a court process?
That's right. In some states, what we refer to as mortgage states, you actually have what's called a mortgage, and you have to go to court to get that enforced. In Virginia and many other states in the country, the trustee actually conducts that sale and doesn't need to go to court to do that.
And tell us again, who actually appoints this trustee?
The lender does.
And I gather that a foreclosure could possibly be stopped if there's some problem in the appointment of the trustee. Could you tell us more about that?
Sure. The lender is the one that's in control of the entire trust process. The lender appoints the trustee, and what will happen in a lot of cases is the lender will appoint a substitute trustee. There'll be a trustee named in the original deed of trust document. And when the lender goes to foreclose, he'll appoint a different trustee. Usually it's one of several firms in Virginia that specialize in conducting foreclosures. And at the time the lender's ready to move, they'll appoint the trustee at that time. What happens from time to time is that the trustee wasn't properly appointed and therefore isn't authorized by law to conduct the sale.
Now, one of the things that we've reported on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show in the past is something called the produce the note movement, or the show me the note movement, to basically show that the person foreclosing is actually the person who owns the house. Is this what you're talking about, somewhat related to that?
Yes, it is related to that. As many borrowers have found out, their note gets sold from time to time. You'll get letters from different people saying, oh, we now own your note, pay your mortgage payment here. And what's actually happening there is someone is buying your loan, and when that happens, the original lender holds a note that you signed that basically says, I promise to pay you this amount of money. When they sell that loan, they are supposed to sign the note over to the new lender. If they fail to do that, which sometimes happens, or they do it improperly, then the new lender doesn't really own the loan and isn't in a position to tell the trustee to foreclose, even if the loan is in default.
Now, I understand there are rules that have to be followed in foreclosing on a property, but those rules really are not set forth in great detail in the Code of Virginia. They're set forth in other documents. Can you explain where you find the rules on how a foreclosure is supposed to take place in terms of notifying the borrower, in terms of advertising, in terms of sale? Where are those rules kept?
For the most part, they're in two places. One of them is in the deed of trust itself, and one of them is in the Virginia Code. And there are other regulations that can affect certain types of loans. But the place to start is with the deed of trust itself, because at its most basic level, the deed of trust is a contract between the borrower and the lender and the trustee. And what the borrower is basically saying is, if these certain things happen, if I'm in default and you do X, Y, and Z, then you, lender, are allowed to tell the trustee to sell my house to satisfy my loan. Often the deed of trust will have some very specific requirements for notices that have to be given to the borrower before the property can be sold. And again, this is a contract situation. So if those particular steps in the deed of trust aren't followed, then the lender is not authorized to sell the property. And one of the most common ones is that many Virginia deeds of trust have a requirement for a 30-day notice, which gives the borrower an amount of time to satisfy the outstanding balance on the loan. It notifies him of certain rights that the borrower has. And again, if that notice isn't properly given, then there's no authority to sell under the deed of trust. And that's one of the first things we look for if someone comes in with a problem related to their loan.
So in other words, you're looking at the specific requirements in the deed of trust and seeing, did the lender or the person servicing the loan do A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, etc.?
That's correct, because if they didn't do all of those things the way the deed of trust says they have to be done, then there's no authority to foreclose.
Now, are there certain circumstances where the lender has to do even more than just send out these notices, but may have to work with the borrower?
Yeah, one of the more common ones is if the deed of trust is an FHA loan, then the FHA has certain regulations that require the lender to meet face-to-face with the borrower and try to work something out. It's a step that lenders very often forget. So if there is an FHA loan, we usually find that that hasn't been done, and that can be a basis to stop the foreclosure.
So how many of the loans that you see our Federal Housing Administration of loans, would you say it's a significant percentage?
It's enough to be worth checking. I would say roughly 20%, 25%, something along those lines.
Now, do you also find that there are problems with the financing of the mortgage? I mean, quite apart from all these technical notice issues, are there problems with the financing of the mortgage that would help you in preventing a foreclosure?
Yeah, one of the most effective ways we have of stopping foreclosures is by looking for Truth in Lending Act violations. And without going into too much detail on the Act, if you have refinanced your house within the last 3 years, there are disclosure requirements that the lender has to meet. And if the lender doesn't meet those, you have the right to go back and tell the lender, you know what, I don't want this loan, and then you're entitled to what's called rescind the loan, say basically put yourself back to square one. And in that case, all the money you've paid to the lender goes toward the principal. You pay off the difference, usually by either refinancing or selling the house, and you end up in a better financial situation than you would have been.
But you do have to pay back the money that you were loaned, what it was two or one or 2.5 years ago.
That's correct, but the advantage is that presumably you've been in the house some period of time, a year and a half, 2 years. During that time, you've been making payments, most of which have been going toward interest. Well, you're allowed to count those completely toward principal, which draws down the balance of that loan to a lower level than it would have been.
And how much money difference would there be between what the lender claims is owed and what you set forth is owed once you've gone through this truth in lending and you've unwound the deal and it's as if it never happened in the first place?
Of course, it depends on the loan and the amount of the payments. But when you're getting those payments back, you also get all your closing costs back. It can be $20,000, $30,000 easily.
Now, a lot of people, when they get into trouble on their mortgages, they think, well, I can file bankruptcy. Is bankruptcy going to ever be effective in helping someone keep their home?
Generally not. In the narrow circumstance where the borrower can afford to make his payments, perhaps the borrower lost a job for a while, fell behind, but has found a new job and can now make the payments. If the borrower can make the payments on his loan, but is unable to make up the back loan or the arrearages, then a Chapter 13 filing can work. But the catch to a Chapter 13 filing is that you can reconstitute your debts, you can put together a plan for paying off as much of them as you can, but to the extent you've got debts that are secured by your house, you're not allowed to change those and not allowed to change the monthly payments of them. So in order to keep the house, you really have to be able to make those monthly payments. If you can't, you can delay the foreclosure, but you're not going to be able to stop it.
So I gather that under current law, the bankruptcy judge simply has no authority to lower the monthly mortgage payments, can possibly give you time to catch up your arrears, but your ongoing monthly mortgage payments, that's absolutely set in stone.
That's correct.
So what should people who are behind on their mortgage do? What's the first step they should do? What are the second, third, fourth steps that they should do if they are in trouble on their mortgage?
Well, I would say the first thing to do is to take action early in the process. We have a lot of people that come into Central Virginia Legal Aid and tell us, my house was foreclosed on last week, or I just got an eviction notice and my house was foreclosed on last month. It's much harder to help once the foreclosure has already taken place. In addition to some of the notice requirements we talked about earlier related to the deed of trust itself, there are Virginia notice requirements under the general mortgage code and under what's called the Virginia High Risk Mortgage Act that require certain notices. And if those haven't been given, we can stop a foreclosure. But if they haven't been given and the foreclosure's already taken place, the law pretty much says you're out of luck. The fact that you didn't get that notice doesn't give you the right to upset the sale. So I guess what I would say is there's a full range of tools that we can use to stop a foreclosure. Once the foreclosure has already happened, it becomes much tougher. So check those mailings, and if you start to get notices of foreclosure, if you start to get threats of foreclosure, that's the time to go in and see someone.
Thank you very much. We have been talking with Jim Thornton. He is a commercial real estate attorney in Glen Allen, Virginia, and volunteers twice a week at Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Thank you so much for the interview, Jim, and thank you for the help you give to Central Virginia Legal Aid Society.
Thank you, Marty.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about docketing a judgment. The first tip is that docketing a judgment is when a creditor who has a judgment against you records the judgment in any circuit court in Virginia. This puts a lien or a claim on any real property you own in that county or city. The second tip is that this lien doesn't mean your house or land will be sold, but it does mean you can't sell it or give it away and turn over a clean property title without paying the judgment. The third tip is that very few judgments are collected by forcing a sale of your house. Usually, the judgment gets paid when you choose to sell the house. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips about docketing a judgment.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. If you're facing a repossession, you may have more legal rights than you think. Join us next week when private attorney Dale Pittman explains the rights consumers have under the Uniform Commercial Code before, during, and after a repossession, and what defenses they can raise if later sued. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.